Welcome to the program for Thursday, May 3rd, 2012 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thursday in the 3 o'clock hour is Industry Chatter. And my guest today is the founder, president, and chief executive officer of DMI, Sunny Bajaj. I appreciate you being here, Sunny. Thank you very much for coming in today.
Thank you, Francis. Good to be here.
Start off, as we always do, by telling us what you do for customers in the federal space, please.
Yeah, absolutely. So DMI is roughly a 10-year-old business, and we're an IT strategy and solutions firm focused on enterprise transformation. So specifically, we go in, understand the agency's business mission vision, and then bring technology solutions to help further the business mission or vision. So most of our capability lies in the system modernization, cybersecurity, and enterprise mobility space.
So when you started the company 10 years ago, what did you see as your space? What were other companies not doing that you thought you could do to give you the edge that you needed?
Sure, absolutely. So, you know, when I got into the business, I decided that I wanted to be differentiated and different. And one of the spaces I saw wide open was that whole innovation space and play. You know, a lot of companies did business as usual, went after client programs and delivered them as usual. And I really thought that there was a play to really be a value player to help bring innovation, ideas, efficiencies to the table for clients in a more proactive manner.
All right, you use the word innovation, and we're hearing that all across the federal space now. Agencies are looking for innovation. You go to any event, and the federal officials stand at the front of the room and say, we're looking for innovation, and so on. What is your sense of what they're looking for, and is what they say they're looking for, do you think, what they're really looking for?
Sure. So I guess let's define that term, right? It's the buzzword of the moment. Mm-hmm. So, for us, innovation isn't technology, right? For us, the word innovation means identifying a problem and coming up with a creative solution to that problem, and obviously putting it in some kind of context of a business or mission. So in that sense, I think agencies are looking for innovation. They truly want that. Sometimes people relegate that term to just mean, you know, a gizmo or gadget or a solution in a box, but that's not it. Are they really getting that? Well, I think the ideas are out there. And, you know, I think they have the ability to get that innovation. They're really open to the ideas. It's more of implementing it that's the challenge. But there's enough ideas out there. Innovation is proliferating, so I think there's plenty of opportunity for federal agencies to really take advantage of it.
How are they doing at making the connection between identifying the ideas that they want and actually being able to procure them and bring them into their agencies and use them?
Yeah, so twofold. So one is on the front end, independently, agencies on their own are actually coming up with innovative ideas. They're training their own workforces to be more innovative, and a lot of the CIOs and leaders are really taking that stance and approach. So when they put together their requirements, they sometimes bake it in from the front end. Now, on the downstream end, you know, as a solutions provider, vendor to the government, when we propose a solution, we like to then bake innovation into our proposal as part of our solution. You know, that here's how we will go ahead and customize or provide this solution to you, and here's some of the advantages it'll inherently bring, you know, once developed or deployed. So, I guess through the procurement process, the proposal allows you as the technology partner to introduce or provide that innovation.
The procurement team, though, is kind of the intermediary between you and the end user. The end user works with the procurement team, set the requirements, and then you respond to that proposal. We all know how that process works. Are the agencies getting better, in your experience, at integrating the end user into the whole process? I've heard stories about, you know, somebody goes and says, okay, we're ready to deploy. You deploy the system, and the end user says, well, does it do X? And everybody kind of slaps their forehead.
So generally speaking, they are getting better. And I think what you're talking about is really the requirements aspect of it. So I think they're getting a lot better at not rushing programs out the door, but really taking time to understand the requirements. Not just the technology requirements, but the business requirements and user requirements. So, yeah, I have been seeing that trend happen. And then, secondly, there's been a lot more collaboration and dialogue in the past few years between industry and the technology service providers. So I think that's kind of helped a lot of the idea sharing go back and forth. And so I think it's moving in the right direction.
You use the term the business requirements, and that's a part of it that maybe has gotten lost in the shuffle a little bit in the past maybe 10 years or so, that's finally starting to get more attention. I don't know if it's the idea of agile development where people are focusing on delivering results. You know, every 12 to 18 months you have to demonstrate that this thing that you're working on actually does something or what. What are you seeing that also? Is that becoming more prevalent, more common, that agencies are focusing on the business requirements?
They are, because I think they've learned just historically that technology out of the box isn't going to solve any problem, right? It's not a panacea. So I think they've realized that they really need to focus on the business requirements and tailor a solution to address the business needs. So, yes, we are seeing a lot of collaboration, a lot of agile development, a lot of iterative development, and rather than having long, protracted system development life cycles where you don't see a product for 2 years, 3 years, now you have these sprints where you can actually see work after a few months and then tie it back to the user requirement and kind of make sure iteratively along the way, you know, you're hitting the nail on the head. So,
is that better for the government customer, and is that better for you as a company to do it that way?
Yeah, I believe so, and I believe so for two different reasons. So from a customer standpoint, you can now see more of a near return on your investment, right? So you don't have to wait a year, 2 years to realize that your investment's off track. So you get a better instant gratification, so to say. And then from the partner perspective, we absolutely love it because now we get to be more collaborative with our client and really work with them, you know, in a higher frequency basis to make sure that the requirements are on point and hone in kind of what we're delivering for them.
What's changed the most in the government business space since you first started your company?
I've seen a change in probably two different areas. One is just in the procurement landscape ecosystem in general. So, you know, the space has become a lot more competitive, right? Everyone, especially after the dot-com bust, has been flocking to, you know, the trough of Uncle Sam. So it's become a lot more competitive. Players that didn't traditionally play in federal are now wanting to become players for that stability and that access to that customer. So it's a lot more competitive. And along with that, the government and the way they procure services has treated IT services as more of a commodity. So, yes, there are some sophisticated agencies and clients out there, but more and more they're looking at services as commodities. So it's one thing, Francis, if you wanted to buy an iPod, right? You can go Google that and buy it from any provider. It's a product. You know what you're getting. But when you're purchasing a service, it's almost like putting an ad out to babysit your children. You're not just going to award that service to anybody. You want to make sure that they're trusted, that they have great references. Because ultimately, you know, it's you know, something's very important and dear to your heart. So the same thing with a service or a system in the federal government. Most of them, you know, want to really be careful on who they award that to and trust, you know, in providing that for them. But unfortunately, because of the way the procurement mechanisms have been working, it's turned into somewhat of a commodity-type marketplace, which I think is unfortunate for some, while it drives costs down, which ultimately I guess agencies like, it squeezes out innovation, you know, to a certain degree.
That's actually where I was going to go next, because I wonder if, especially in the procurement shops, if that's not what happens, because if you look at something and the potential on this proposal, it includes some innovative ideas and some approaches to a problem that may not be obvious or quantifiable immediately, but there's a good business case there. Or you look over here and it's the same way we've always done things, and it winds up being cheaper in the short term. I think we have a pretty good idea who's going to get that deal, and yet long-term wise, life cycle wise, might not be the best solution for the government.
So I agree, and that's exactly how it's looked at now is, you know, we can do business as usual and we can procure at lowest price technically acceptable, or we can try to look for value and be innovative. It all depends on the client set. I mean, we have a diverse client set. A lot of our clients actually don't mind, especially if they have the budget, of going for the innovative solution and looking for the big picture. But then a lot of clients really want to kind of do the business as usual and just have the requirements satiated. And if they can save some money in doing so, then, they look forward to that.
So. A friend of mine who has been on the government side for a long time but has never been in industry said the other day that he's skeptical of the concept of innovation at the same time as the 85% solution. And you're familiar with both of those terms, I'm sure. What do you think of that intersection? Is there an intersection, or are those two roads that don't ever really cross?
I mean, I think you can have an intersection, right? So while idea thinking and innovation is free, right, in the business of IT services, you know, where you're putting human capital in projects, you need to have the room for that, so to speak. So I think more and more, especially with federated enterprise architectures in place, agencies are looking to see how they can incrementally, you know, move up that 85% mark, you know, but also procure or contract with a value player. So, you know, I think you can have an intersection.
Sonny Bajaj is my guest. He is the chief executive officer of DMI, my guest on Industry Chatter today on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment on In Depth with Francis Rose.
And deliver government healthcare contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Moreover, with over 900 healthcare IT initiatives proposed in the 2013 federal budget, you need to begin building your healthcare IT teams now. Meet Tech Systems. Every year, Tech Systems deploys thousands of IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems Government Services offers a dedicated healthcare division to deliver practical healthcare IT solutions to the federal, state, and local government. No matter where you are on your meaningful use journey, Tech Systems can guide you through the transition. From providing managed services that tailor end-user training by role and workflow, to providing BI solutions that get you closer to your quality care goals, Tech Systems, our people make IT possible. Learn more at techsystems.com, TEKsystems.com.
Reusing government personal property can save taxpayers millions of dollars. It's also a requirement that federal agencies acquire excess personal property first before purchasing new items. If you're wondering how to acquire excess personal property or transfer your agency's excess personal property, turn to GSA at gsa.gov/reusecmp. GSA offers programs and online tools such as GSA Access to help reuse and recycle items ranging from office equipment and furniture to computers, scientific devices, heavy machinery, airplanes, boats, and much more. Let GSA help you get the most out of the government's resources while saving money and protecting the environment. Remember, when you no longer need it, someone else does. For more information on reusing and recycling your excess personal property, visit GSA at gsa.gov/reusecmp. gsa.gov/reusecmp. That's gsa.gov/reusecmp.
At Kaiser Permanente, we're about keeping you connected, so we made My Health Manager. It connects you to your doctor, your prescriptions, your test results, and your health records right at home. But what if you aren't home? What if you're visiting family, or at the beach, or on a business trip? What if you're on a steep mountain trail, you know, with loose gravel and one way in and one way out? Now, there's the Kaiser Permanente mobile app. It connects you right from your smartphone. You can email your doctor while visiting family, refill your prescription from the beach, take your medical records on a business trip, or schedule, say, a little checkup from that steep trail. No matter where you are, we'll keep you connected without keeping you from any of life's adventures. Get the app by searching Kaiser Permanente in the Android market or bookmark kp.org on your smartphone. Coming soon to the Apple App Store, Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852. Apple is the registered trademark of Apple Inc. Android is a trademark of Google Inc.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Friday's Federal Drive. The IRS is losing experienced people by the thousands. Workloads are rising. The Treasury Union president and the commissioner have that big worry in common. Plus, Dr. Margaret Hamburg joins us live in studio for an update on reform at the Food and Drug Administration. Those stories and more tomorrow morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain on how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest on Industry Chatter today is Sunny Bajaj of DMI. We talked about innovation in the first segment, Sunny, and we talked about some of the things that agencies are looking for. Is it your view that it is getting easier or harder to do business with the agencies, not just because of budget situations, but because of requirements and regulations and so on? Is it getting easier or harder for you, do you think?
Well, you know, in general, Francis, I think it's getting a little bit more challenging to do business. And I think a lot of that is, I'll say, it has to do with the whole procurement life cycle in federal contracting. You know, the requirements can be tweaked and all that. But, you know, we're in an environment, as I mentioned, that's more and more competitive from a procurement contracting standpoint. And because of that, you know, in diminishing margins, you have a lot of contractors out there that have been protesting programs, you know, almost like frivolous lawsuits, frivolous protests on procurement. So that delays the procurement cycle, you know, stalls the program from taking off, you know, costs a lot of money, consumes a lot of time, both on the federal side as well as the whole contractor community. So as a way to avoid that, I've seen a lot of agencies now start to use specific procurement vehicles, you know, vehicles that have a lower threshold for protestability, easier procurement cycles, quicker procurement cycles. So, you know, unless you're a player on some of these major IDIQs or GWACs, these pre-existing vehicles, where there's a limited competition, so obviously you have a lesser chance of someone protesting, it's difficult to kind of get in because a lot of the requirements are going to these pre-existing vehicles. And quite frankly, a lot of the driver behind that is, sure, some of it's cost savings from a procurement standpoint, but a lot of the driver is to kind of limit industry from, you know, screwing up or protesting frivolously a lot of these programs.
Is the prevalence and the fact that these vehicles are becoming more and more common good or bad for a company like yours?
Well, from our own selfish perspective, I think it's good because we are on quite a few of them. So for us, it gives us access now to a client base and procurement dollars in a limited competition environment. And we know that, you know, someone's not going to throw stones because the chance of them being awarded a task for being a stone thrower is going to be less next time, or at least that's the unspoken rule, right? So for our standpoint, it's great. But for someone who's nascent in the industry or trying to build a company from scratch or grow it, it's very challenging if you don't have the right procurement mechanisms in place. It's not as simple as finding a client and saying, hey, we have a solution to your problem. Okay, we want to contract it. You know, it's more of, okay, well, here's the vehicles we have. Go team with that company, and we can get you through there. So
it may be a good structure for DMI the way it is today, but maybe not the way it was 8-9 years ago when you were first starting out. Is that fair to say, do you think?
Yeah, that's correct.
The idea of finding the partners and so on, that my observation is that that's becoming more and more critical. Is that true, do you think?
I think so, because I think, you know, while a company has capability, if you're truly talking about, you know, innovation, you know, one company can't really bring that to the table alone. I mean, you can, but really you want to leverage everyone's specific skill set and depth of expertise. So, you know, in our case, we really rely heavily on partners so we can truly put together a competitive, compelling, and innovative solution for our client. You know, it's while I'm sure it's possible, it's a really hard value proposition that one company can provide something so well-rounded and compelling without leveraging the expertise of other industry experts.
How do you find good partners, and what makes a good partner?
Well, Francis, there's no shortage of partners in this town and in the IT industry. So, we find them based on either client intimacy, so they really have a close pulse on the customer's vision and mission, right? So we're making sure that whatever solution we're deploying is in that context. Or they have a niche capability. And so, we kind of use the word of mouth, circle of friends to find partners or, do some searches on Google or Yahoo. For certain niche capabilities. So that's kind of how we identify it. And then what makes a good partner is really two things, in my opinion, trust, right? You have to be able to trust them that they're going to live up to their end of the bargain, both on the upfront proposal standpoint and maybe some client knowledge, but also afterwards that they're going to deliver and they're going to be there and help you deliver. And it's not just viewed as, okay, it's a revenue stream for me, I'll just leave it alone, but it's, okay, we're supposed to do something for the client together, we're all in. So that's the first aspect of a good partner, and then I guess the second one, in my opinion, is, it's always a two-way street, right? Symbiotic relationship. So you want to make sure that, you trust them, but also, while you're bringing them in opportunities, they're bringing you in opportunities.
You talk about competition, and I wonder what you're seeing, shrinking margins, budget issues, and so on. Are you seeing companies, are you competing against companies that were not in the same space going after the same kinds of business that you were maybe 2 or 3 years ago?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So I'll give you the best example. A few years ago, these large Fortune 500 IT companies, the 3-4-letter acronyms, they didn't look at smaller programs, really the crumbs, so to speak. They always went after the major, massive, large-scale enterprise programs. Well, now there's more pressure on them, to grow the business units or show the margin growth. They're now playing or looking, territories that they've never been on before. So they're starting to play in the, elementary school playgrounds and things like that. So that's something that's, been a big trend over the past few years that I've noticed.
How do you compete against a company like that? Do you try to compete on price? Do you try to compete on value, service, what, or a mix of all of those, something else?
A mix of all of them. So really, ultimately, when you build a business, you want to build a reputation, right? So you're hoping your reputation and capability sets you apart. Secondly, you always have to be competitive because if you're not, someone else will. And then, quite frankly, as a mid-market player, someone who's a tweener, we're no longer a small, we're not a large. One of the most competitive advantages we have is the fact that we're big enough that we have a lot of capability and past performance, but we're small enough where we're not stodgy and stale and have 15 layers of red tape, so we can really be agile, flexible, responsive, and innovative. And I personally feel it's a great space to play in where, you get to kind of beat the big guys at their own game because you can do things, faster and more responsive and quicker than them and make decisions quicker and respond to clients quicker.
Sonny Bajaj is my guest. He is the president and chief executive officer of DMI, and we'll continue our conversation on Industry Chatter in a minute on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Listen to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM every Friday morning at 11, brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Fed Talk features live interviews with guests from the federal community sharing their insights on issues that affect you. Call in or email questions or comments to fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Fed Talk is sponsored by GEICO. This week on Fed Talk, host Deborah Roth will be joined by Craig Floyd from the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund and David Wise from Motorola to discuss this year's National Police Week.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
This is Lisa Millman from AFMA. For over 133 years, AFMA has proudly served the U.S. Armed Forces community. We're more than just great life insurance for the military family. We're your guide through life's challenges by offering the right products at the right time for the best price. Our Survivor Assistance Services team provides compassionate and caring advice and assistance for your family at a most critical time. At AFMA, we understand the many challenges that military families can face during their service and after the loss of a loved one. As a nonprofit membership association, AFMA always focuses on what's best for you. That means offering the best prices on life insurance for all military personnel and the best services for survivors. And it also means offering policies with no war or aviation clauses. For a free life insurance quote, call a membership coordinator at 1-877-398-2263 or visit us online at AFMA.com. That's AAFMAA.com.
Rock that fanny pack, wearing those khakis last.
Kevin, yeah? What are you doing?
Just singing this sweet tune I heard on the radio this morning.
We need to get you HD radio, man. Those are not the lyrics. If you were listening to that song in my Kia Optima with the UVO infotainment system and HD radio, you'd hear all the lyrics with crystal clear digital sound quality. Plus the artist and song title even display on my UVO screen.
Then let's go for a ride and hope the fanny pack song comes on.
Voice-activated UVO infotainment system with HD radio, now available in the Kia Optima.
The light sheds on melanoma. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. We all need vitamin D for our skin health, but in moderation. A study finds that young people, especially women, may be spending too much time in the sun or any time in the tanning bed because they're getting skin cancer more often. In the last 40 years, women under 40 years have been diagnosed with melanoma 8 times more frequently, men 4 times as much. But there's good news. Dr. Jerry Brewer is at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota.
Even if you do get it, if you find it early enough and have it treated properly, you can survive it.
There's more good news. Treatment has improved as cases have gone up. Early detection is key.
See a dermatologist, and that could save your life.
The study in the Mayo Clinic proceedings was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school. Beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma. Or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible.
March for Babies!
Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
Want the latest Department of Defense news? Listen every Wednesday for DoD Wednesday on Federal News Radio. Wednesday afternoons at 2, Federal News Radio DoD reporter Jared Serbu hosts On DoD, a discussion with senior managers about how the department meets its mission. Then stick around Wednesday afternoons at 3 when in-depth host Francis Rose brings you Pentagon Solutions, a deep dive into the issues and challenges of the defense community. All this plus our daily DoD updates at 40 past the hour, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Sunny Bajaj of DMI is my guest on Industry Chatter today. We've talked a fair amount about process and so on so far in the program. I want to get into some of the areas that you're working in on a regular basis and talk about what you're seeing at the agencies. A couple of them that you mentioned in particular at the beginning of the program are cybersecurity and the mobile space. Let's start in the mobile space because that's what everybody seems to be talking about. The expectations that employees have seem to be what's driving this mobile revolution rather than what the mission of the agency is. And then stepping back and saying, how can we meet the mission of the agency by deploying some mobile technology that we didn't have access to in the past? Is that a fair snapshot of what you're seeing? And how is that? Is that what you're seeing when you go out to agencies?
So yes, we are. But actually, at a higher level, Francis, what we're kind of realizing is that mobility is here, right? I mean, it's ubiquitous. Everyone has mobile devices. I think by the year 2016, 85% of all enterprise employees are going to be using mobile devices for work, right? So that's not going anywhere. A lot of agencies have piloted or tested, mobile solutions. Or mobility in their agency. We've seen that a lot, worked with them. So they've definitely gotten their feet wet. But at a bigger picture, higher level, a lot of the clients that we have and agencies we talk to are telling us that they really need to take a few steps back and look at mobility in a broader perspective, right? So, you know, they have point solutions out there for mobile application development, for mobile device management, for security on mobile. But, you know, they really don't have a strategy for in a broader picture. How are they going to pull all of that together to become a true, you know, enterprise, you know, mobilized or mobile enterprise? And then obviously in that umbrella, you know, address the security, usability, and productivity. So, and part of that is going back to the mission then and the employees. But at a broad perspective, agencies are really trying to come up with a holistic approach and strategy for how do we take mission into consideration? How do we take employees into consideration? How do we take devices into consideration? How do we take apps and services into consideration? So that's kind of what we're noticing out there.
What I see when I see from time to time pilot programs and so forth is that lack of strategy that you're talking about. Now, not every case, of course. Roger Baker's piloting a program at VA for tablet devices for physicians and nurses to use so that they will have access to electronic health records wherever they go. And that makes a lot of sense. We learned about the Air Force's program for their Special Ops Command to use tablet computers for in flight bags instead of all the papers that pilots have to carry. All those kinds of things are directed well, it seems to me, because somebody's thinking about the mission first and not just let's do mobile. I'm reminded of maybe 3 or 4 years ago when social networking started to become popular in government. And I had a conversation with not a CIO, but close at an agency that said, and this conversation went something like this, we're about ready to go on Facebook. And I said, that's great. What are you going to do on Facebook? Well, we're going to have a page on Facebook. Well, what are you going to do on that page? And the person wasn't really sure how they were going to interact with citizens or what kind of information they were going to distribute or what kind of expectation they had about what they might get back, what the expectation might be of the citizen communicating with them. And I still see some of that, it looks like, when I'm looking at what agencies are thinking about doing with mobile computing. Is that a fair observation, do you think?
It is. And with any emerging technology, right, the technology's there, right? And implementing and deploying it is a piece of cake. The real issue to figure out is the why, and also that requires a tectonic shift in government policy and culture. And so that's an aspect that needs to be addressed. But, you know, from security to usability to productivity, those are really the three lines of what the mobile device will, you know, all encompass, or at least, you know, the integrated management of it. You want to kind of create a roadmap, first an architecture and then a roadmap of, okay, how am I going to manage the devices? What type of services am I going to provide? Is it going to be internal for process automation, or is it going to be external for citizen-centric? Are there any compliance or standards issues in place? So a lot of this hasn't been defined yet, you know, in the federal space. So I guess the definition of it is one aspect, but also coming up with an overall engagement strategy is the other. And I think that's what a lot of agencies, at least that we talk to, are struggling with now is, you know, what's my overall engagement strategy for not just lifecycle device management, but lifecycle application management.
When you say engagement strategy, is that a nice term for what are we going to do and how are we going to do it? Because I'll give you my own example. I don't claim to be the tech-savviest guy in the world, but I'm about a year into my iPhone experience. I'm having a hard time imagining, although I find it to be a tremendously productive tool, I have a hard time imagining how you would do a whole lot enterprise-wise, how you would produce any kind of volume of work. So is that what you're talking about when you talk about an engagement strategy?
It's not necessarily just the device, right, which is the form factor, but, you know, it encompasses several different things. So, for example, the overall standards, okay, you know, what standards am I going to create and put in place? And then coupled with that and a part of standards is security, right? So what are the security requirements I'm going to have? So you know, security is not one size fits all, right? So some agencies may say, okay, I need double factor authentication. Some may say I need container-based security. Some may say I need to create dual or virtual personas on the device so that, for instance, if you're using your iPhone and, you know, you have Angry Birds on it and your Yahoo email, but you're using it for work and you leave company, you know, they can wipe the work persona, you know, and get that data off there. So, you know, those types of things of how they're going to manage, you know, the security aspect. The other aspect of that is the device management in general, right? So right now you have, well, last year I think over 500 million smartphones were shipped. And for the first time in history, that's more smartphones shipped than PCs on an annual basis. So now you got devices out there and, you know, it's they're not homogenous. Right, so it's not just the iPhone iOS system, but you got Android devices, you have Blackberries, you have, you know, Windows-based operating systems. So, you know, we have now, whereas in your traditional enterprise with your desktop and laptops, you have a, you know, homogenous Windows environment, so to say, most agencies do. Now you have different OSs you have to manage and different devices. So taking that into account, obviously because of their form factor too and being mobile, they're a lot more vulnerable and susceptible to theft and damage. So then you figure that into the equation. Also from an apps deployment standpoint, so, you know, any large-scale enterprise application you have in your agency, you don't want to really port that onto a mobile device as it is, right? So from a usability standpoint, when we use our iPhone or smartphone, it's we just want a few clicks or a few taps, right? So a lot of agencies are need to start looking at applications as not monolithic, but is creating smaller granular apps for either their citizens to use or internal, you know, employees to use, you know, for whatever their work productivity purpose is. You know, do I think that tomorrow the smartphones and mobile devices are going to replace the desktop and laptop? No, but I think over time you're going to get a lot more services on them for business productivity, you know, in multiple different areas that are going to create efficiencies, increase productivity, that over time they will absolutely start to take a lot of the day-to-day productivity tasks away from desktops. So, you know, I think that's really the all-encompassing kind of mobile enterprise that has different factors and facets that all different agencies need to look at and address. And a lot of them are doing it, but they're doing it kind of, you know, one point at a time.
There is something about the app deployment business model that I'm not clear on, and I want to see if you can help me understand it better when we come back from the break. Sunny Bajaj of DMI is my guest on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Our conversation will continue in a moment on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Attention civilian employees of the intelligence community and the Departments of Defense and State. You could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com/term life. That's GEBA.com/term life. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102. Contract series 83500.
The long-anticipated retirement tsunami may finally be coming to fruition in the federal government. Retirement applications are up in 2012, and the number of feds calling it quits in 2011 was at a 10-year high. Federal News Radio examines what agencies are doing to make up for the loss of institutional knowledge at leadership levels. Plus, experts weigh in on whether current budget restrictions will impact recruiting. Read our exclusive report at federalnewsradio.com. Search retirement.
Want the latest Department of Defense news? Listen every Wednesday for DoD Wednesday on Federal News Radio. Wednesday afternoons at 2, Federal News Radio DoD reporter Jared Serbu hosts On DoD, a discussion with senior managers about how the department meets its mission. Then stick around Wednesday afternoons at 3 when in-depth host Francis Rose brings you Pentagon Solutions, a deep dive into the issues and challenges of the defense community. All this plus our daily DoD updates at 40 past the hour, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest is Sonny Bajaj. He is the founder, president, and chief executive officer of DMI. And my question is about apps. Now, most people have a concept now of an app being something that you download to your device, and it's either free or a dollar or something like that. And every once in a while, I find one that offers something, some service inside that I pay a couple of more bucks for. My question is there a business model for companies, whether it's companies like yours or others, to provide that service to federal agencies? Just, is that a workable business model, or is there going to have to be some reshaping of the way people think about apps or the way people use them or something else?
So that's a fair question. So, Francis, the way that companies like us or others in the industry would tackle that is, you know, in the federal model, you can't put federal apps on the iStore and have, you know, people go and download them, right? So they have to come up with their own app store, so to speak, on how they're going to have apps available out there. Obviously, these apps have been tested and secure and, you know, approved by the agencies. And then how their users are going to go ahead and download them onto their personal devices, the BYOD phenomenon, and use them for business productivity. So managing that app store marketplace for an agency, while intuitively it seems like something that a GSA should do, a lot of agencies are struggling with that. Some are actually coming up with their own kind of app stores. But, helping them manage that is more than just putting the app up there. It's the deployment of it. It's the updating of the apps. It's the whole life cycle of it. So I think there is a business model around managing that whole service provision, app store for an agency.
So that's where the business model is, not in the actual development and distribution of the individual app.
No, so in general, you can develop and distribute an individual app. That's a discrete project, and you can obviously, contract some dollars, get some dollars for that. But, the holy grail is in the managed services aspect of it. And I think that's really, as a technology provider, a solutions provider, where we'd like to play, where everyone wants to play, is be a managed services provider where you can actually run the end-to-end soup to nuts.
You mentioned BYOD, and that's something we haven't talked much about. How big of a wrinkle does that throw into the whole mobility discussion in government? The idea that I could bring in God only knows what device and say, here, I want to get this on the network.
Yeah, so last week you had Chris Hummel on the show, he had touched on that, and I thought he hit the nail on the head. But, it does throw a wrinkle in there, and it does for two reasons. So one is the majority of federal CIOs, the biggest things that keep them awake at night with mobility are security and a rogue device connected to their network, right? So from that standpoint, BYOD, does cause some challenges or issues that need to be addressed. Now, having said that, in the bigger picture of things, it's not going to go anywhere, and I'll tell you why. So, for lack of a better word, right now the whole telecommuting promotes BYO workspace, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, so you're literally using your own device and workspace connected to a federal network to be productive and do work. Well, so if we can live with that, then why can't we live with someone bringing their own handheld? It's pretty much the same thing. Otherwise, you'll have to shoot teleworking down. And then the second aspect is from a cost driver. So, for example, for average cost to support a desktop or laptop per instance per year for a federal agency is roughly $4,000 to $7,000. Well, if you're adding new devices now, iPhones, smartphones or iPads, now you've exponentially increased your cost basis. While they're cheaper to support, it's still cost. So rather than buying and provisioning those devices and handing them out like BlackBerries, It's from a cost standpoint, it's a cheaper value proposition to allow the BYOD phenomenon to happen. This way people can refresh and turn their devices over at their own leisure, and you don't have to worry about paying for that. All you have to worry about is that it's just supported in the framework that you defined.
Your life becomes an architecture exercise rather than a device exercise, I guess.
Yeah, no one wants to be in the business of managing devices, right? I mean, if I'm NASA, I could care less about managing mobile devices. I want to manage space programs, you know? It's really outsourcing that aspect of it. And that's why I think there's a real huge play for system integrators in the whole end-to-end, enterprise mobile enterprise management space, the device management, where like you do computers now and managed services, you know, agencies just pay for the usage, right, certain amount per month, and that includes the hardware, the software, the support service, the refreshment of the equipment, so it's just paying for the utility of that. So I think if you look at mobile devices, and you see device management in the mobile space, it's going to turn into that same kind of utility, could turn into that same utility model.
You touched on a way of approaching that that I don't think I've heard or thought of before. I want to ask you about that a little bit more to wrap up our conversation when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest on Industry Chatter today is Sunny Bajaj. He is the President and Chief Executive Officer of DMI, and we'll finish up in just a moment on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Staying focused on your mission requires making smart decisions and mitigating unnecessary risks. That's why many agencies turn to GSA. With unparalleled experience in acquisition and financial compliance and technical expertise, GSA makes it easy for federal, civilian, and military customers to maintain mission focus and enhance program performance by adding value. With trained professionals in contracting, financial, and program management, GSA stands ready to help execute large-scale and/or complex and/or sensitive IT and professional services projects while maintaining seamless compliance with today's tough mandates. With GSA, you gain a trusted partner to ensure delivery promises are kept on time, on budget, and at best value. To learn how GSA can help, call 703-605-3699. That's 703-605-3699. Or visit gsa.gov/AAS. That's gsa.gov/AAS. GSA, providing custom solutions to your complex requirements.
To win and deliver government healthcare contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Moreover, with over 900 healthcare IT initiatives proposed in the 2013 federal budget, you need to begin building your healthcare IT teams now. Meet Tech Systems. Every year, Tech Systems deploys thousands of IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems Government Services offers a dedicated healthcare division to deliver practical healthcare IT solutions to the federal, state, and local government. No matter where you are on your meaningful use journey, Tech Systems can guide you through the transition, from providing managed services that tailor end-user training by role and workflow, to providing BI solutions that get you closer to your quality care goals. Tech Systems, our people make IT possible. Learn more at TechSystems.com, TekSystems.com.
When you build the world's most complex ships for the U.S. Navy and U.S. Coast Guard, there's no question you know how to do the hard stuff right. At Huntington Ingalls Industries, it's what we do every day. We are a company that's more than a century old and built upon the foundation of two legends, Newport News Shipbuilding and Ingalls Shipbuilding, with an unwavering focus on safety, quality, cost, and schedule. Huntington Ingalls Industries. Hard stuff. Done right. Visit HuntingtonIngalls.com today.
Join the Association for Federal Information Resources Management Awards Luncheon and celebrate as they applaud achievement in the federal IT community. The annual Affirm Leadership Awards recognize individuals and groups who are leading innovation in government. The awards will be given out on Thursday, June 14, 2012, at the Affirm Leadership Awards Luncheon at the Capitol Hilton, 1001 16th Street Northwest, Washington, D.C. Register today at affirm.org.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest on Industry Chatter today is DMI founder, president, chief executive officer, Sunny Bajaj. The word that you touched on in our last conversation, the last part of our talk, was outsourcing. And that's essentially what we're doing with BYOD. And I had not thought of it or heard it presented that way before. The agencies are outsourcing their device infrastructures to their own employees. What when I think of it that way, in the way that you're presenting it, it sounds brilliant to me, because you're offloading something that you really don't want to do anymore to folks who are willing and in many cases eager to take on that responsibility.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's really in a nutshell what it is. And I think as long as the security issue has been addressed, as well as some governance in place, I don't think agencies would have a problem outsourcing the devices, once again, to the employees. And in a nutshell, that's really what it is. This way, they don't have to worry about, buying, fixing, devices. They just have to worry about providing and provisioning the service of the business applications.
Another area you play in, and I'm sorry we didn't have a chance to talk about it more throughout this conversation, but is cybersecurity. Are we finally getting past the point where people are thinking about cybersecurity as an afterthought? I wanted to do this and this and this, and I also have to figure out a way to make it secure. And are we getting to the point where people are asking for security to be woven into what they're buying?
Yeah, absolutely. So two of the big trends we see out there in cyber are, first of all, what started out as a bunch of kids trying to hack into a system, has evolved now into criminal networks that are syndicated and, cyber state-sponsored cyber warfare units. So the threat's there. And with millions and millions of devices connecting each year, every day, the threat's pervasively spreading. So the good news is that now we're seeing agencies move from just, hey, let me be compliant with FISMA and do a CNA, to more continuous monitoring, right? So to move the pendulum from being reactive to proactive, in their cybersecurity posture. So you're going to see a lot of agencies really start to go more into continuous monitoring solutions, situational awareness, and have a more proactive approach to managing cyber threats on the front end rather than a paper-based compliance solution, on the back end. The second major development you're seeing, and it's very long overdue, is the notion of hardware-based security technologies. So this is called trusted computing. So trusted computing, without getting super technical on you, is basically hardware-based security. So baked into the hardware, you have your security integrity scanning going on. So as soon as a machine starts up, you do an integrity scan and make sure that the systems are all clean and safe. Unlike software, which can be subverted by malware, hardware can't. So it's a standard that's going to be a big trend in the future, especially as you have now automobiles and homes and other devices that are having internet protocols and being networked, it can get hacked into. That'll be another trend, is the trusted computing hardware-based security.
Sonny, I wish I had a lot more time to talk to you this afternoon. I'm just plain out of it, but I appreciate you being here today. I've enjoyed this conversation very much.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate being here.
Happy to have you. Sonny Bajaj is the founder, president, and chief executive officer of DMI, and you can find a link to them at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. My conversation with Sonny will be posted on our website later this afternoon. Hour number two of In-Depth with Francis Rose coming in just a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be right back.